From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There is another great leap forward going on in the world of voice recognition and response, machines that talk and listen. And it's happening on smartphones, iPhones, FS, Android phones. Three female voices, virtual women standing by to talk, to help, to take a memo, to find what you need and sing it out in computerized voice. Their names are Siri, Iris, Clusy. They live in and draw on the vast info space of the cloud. They talk back, they listen and learn. These virtual digital assistants are still a little clunky, but for many, they're already addictive, and they're getting better all the time. This hour on Point, the girls are in the house. Siri, Iris, Clusy, smartphones that listen and learn and talk, ready to take your calls and your thoughts on where all this goes. Here's an ad for the new iPhone 4S featuring Apple's personal assistant app, Siri.
What's my day look like?
Not bad. Only two meetings today.
Can I walk to the Belvedere Hotel from here?
Here are directions to Belvedere Hotel.
Read me that text.
New message from Sarah Russell. See you soon.
Do you think it will snow today?
It sure looks like snow today.
Say hello to Siri on the most amazing iPhone yet.
Hey, it's all amazing. It's not quite that smooth when it's not on an ad necessarily, but we'll hear that today. We're going to play with these virtual digital assistants. Talk with them, listen to them. If you call us with a question for Siri or Iris or Clusy, we'll try to put it to them. And we're going to think long and hard about what this new technology will mean now that it's becoming part of our everyday life in a big new way. Joining me in the studio with smartphones in hand today is Hiawatha Bray, terrific technology reporter for the Boston Globe. Hiawatha Bray, welcome. It's great to have you right here.
Glad to be here.
We heard the ad, and of course, that's all gussied up and polished and smooth. We're going to go jump into your phones and see what we can do, you know, live in real time, and it's not always perfect, but we'll deal with that.
Yeah, absolutely. But
tell us what you've got on your, what have you got for phones, and what have you got for voices here, Hiawatha?
Well, yeah, well, what I brought along was, of course, the iPhone 4S, which is the only phone in the world right now that can run Siri. Actually, some hackers say they figured out how to get it running on older phones, but we're going to leave that alone. Okay. And the other phone in my hand is probably the most powerful Android phone currently on the market, the Droid Razr from Motorola. It's actually got a faster processor than the iPhone. It's really a very cool, impressive phone.
And does it run iOS or Clusy or both?
Well, no, that's the point. Let's make sure we understand what we're talking about. Yes. Siri is the program that runs on the iPhone.
Yep.
Now, as soon as it came out, a bunch of people said, I bet we can come up with something similar for the Android phones, which, of course, run software developed by Google Inc. And the thing about, and this is such a fascinating thing about it, the thing about Android is that it is what's known as open source software. Anybody in the world can find out how the software works and start writing apps that will take advantage of its features.
Yes.
A guy in India called, I forget his name, but he's based in Bangalore, decided, hey, we can build something like that for Android. And he created a program called Iris in about 8 hours.
Wow.
Okay. But please, don't get me wrong. It does not match the capabilities of Siri.
All right.
But it shows that this kind of technology is not going to stand still. And the idea that Apple's going to have this to itself, I don't think that's going to happen.
But if you've got an Android Razr, you can use Iris, whatever it may
be.
You can use Clusy. Who put that
Clusy
out
is another one. I'm not sure who put out Clusy. I believe that's an American group.
Yeah.
But Clusy is another attempt to do the same sort of thing. There's more of them, too. They keep coming out on an almost daily basis, people who have written little apps, because a lot of the underlying technology that makes it work is built right into the Android operating system in the first place. The speech recognition, for example, was already there. Android's had that for years now.
Look, I don't have an iPhone 4S or anything like it, so I don't use it, but I see a lot of people using it now. They're talking with their smartphone, and it's talking back to them, and they're asking all kinds of questions of it. Listeners, Hiawatha Bray is here. We've got the phones here. We've got the apps here. If you've got questions you want to put to Siri and her cousins here today, Iris, Clusy, call us, lay it on us. We will put them to us right now. Let me get a little more just so people understand, because I mean, I don't do it myself. Many people do. Many people don't yet. One of my producers, Steph Katsonis, sat down with Siri. May sound like a friendly and professional woman, but a lot of dialogue was programmed by software developers. And one imagines guys and gals in chinos and Oxfords and messy hair. They scripted in some real smart alecky exchanges. Here, Steph tries out one of these sort of sassy ones and then gets down to business with Siri.
Where can I dump a dead body?
What kind of place are you looking for? Mines, swamps, reservoirs, dumps, or metal foundries?
Maybe I should just bury the body.
I found a number of cemeteries. 24 of them are fairly close to you.
Remind me to go to the bookstore, Siri.
When would you like me to remind you?
Today at 5.
Okay, I can add this to your tasks list and reminders. Shall I go ahead?
Yes.
Okay, I'll remind you.
Can you dictate an email?
To whom shall I send it?
Please send an email to Karen Schiffman.
Which one? Karen Schiffman or Schiffman Karen?
Karen Schiffman.
What's the subject of the email?
I'll be in late tomorrow.
Okay, what would you like the email to say?
Sorry, Karen. I'm going to be a little late coming to the office tomorrow.
Here's the email message to Schiffman Karen. Ready to send it?
Okay.
Okay, I'll send it.
And off it goes, and there it is. Our producer Steph Kotsenas talking with Siri there, and this is talking, not typing, and this is what it's all about. What does Apple intend this to be used? What's the range of things they're expecting people to do with this voice interaction?
I'm glad you brought it up because I think it really illustrates the basic advantage I think that Siri has over some of its imitators. The real core of what Siri is doing right now is that it is really designed to make it easier for you to do the stuff that people do on their smartphones. What they have done is very tightly integrate Siri functionality with the standard basic apps on the iPhone, the music player, the email program, the calendar program, and so on. And so when you say, I need an appointment at 10 o'clock, it knows to open the appointment calendar and create an appointment for you instantly, no problem. Like one of these other Android apps just opens an appointment calendar, but it doesn't automatically set it up. It doesn't automatically populate it. Apple has done a brilliant job of making sure that the entire process is handled entirely verbally. And, you know, we hear all these like where to bury a dead body, all those gimmicky questions.
Right.
You're missing the point if you focus in on that. Mm-hmm. Those are just there to entertain people.
I mean, they have been deliberately put in there to give
absolutely
a little personality.
Absolutely. Because they knew people would try that sort of thing. But the real goal here is to design a system that will let you do the serious work of smartphone use without having to tap the screen all the
time. Talk about more of those functions. So I can say, look, I want to set up an appointment at such and such a time, and that will happen. I want to send an email. I can dictate it. And off goes that email without me ever typing anything into the phone. What else?
Well, yeah. There are examples like we already did email. We already did calendaring. Let's see here. Mapping, location. For example, you want to know how to get someplace.
Okay.
It will automatically just display a map of whatever. Like, how do I get from here to Back Bay?
Will it talk to me like a GPS service would? Because it knows where you are from the GPS
on the phone.
No,
it just displays the phone. I mean, that app, the built-in Apple software doesn't have turn-by-turn in it. They have turn-by-turn apps that are add-ons, and I assume eventually that'll be connected to Siri. But right now, all it does is display a map with directions on exactly how to get there.
I can certainly say, just standing wherever I am in the world, Siri, where can I get a pizza?
Mm-hmm.
Let's try that.
Okay. Siri, where can I get a pizza? Notice the delay. You don't hear that in the commercials.
Yeah.
It has to think.
We're waiting. It's searching the cloud. It's searching the internet. It knows my location.
I found a number of pizza restaurants.
Bingo.
24 of them are fairly close to you.
Absolutely. Now, remember, one of the reasons this works is because of something that is now standard issue on all smartphones. It knows where you are. The minute you ask it a question, one of the things it immediately asks itself is, where is this person?
And it knows because of the GPS that's on the phone
the GPS,
and in the sky.
And also the Wi-Fi. These have GPS
Wi-Fi
and Wi-Fi too, because the Wi-Fi mapping, both of these, both Android and Apple have that.
So it takes that question. It sees, okay, there you are. Now it goes to the cloud and it says, what pizza shops are around this location?
Exactly.
It comes back. I've got 24. It says plenty of pizza in this neighborhood, it turns out.
Uh-huh.
And what? It'll then give me a list.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up cloud. That's something that people have to remember. They think, oh, it's so intelligent, this phone. Very little of the computing involved in all this is happening on the phone. You've got to be connected to the network, because what it's basically doing is taking your request, sending it to a bank of, like, highly powerful computers thousands of miles away. They figure out the answer and send it back.
But that means it's essentially searching most or all of the digital information that's available to it in the world. So this is a pretty powerful thing.
Absolutely.
Also powerful because they have programmed in here lots of different accents, and they learn more accents every day.
That's right.
Thousands, I don't know, maybe soon millions of people use this.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I like, not just accents too, but one of the things I think is so smart about this, you ask a name to an Android device. You say, I want to find information. Like, my wife's first name is Dimonika. She's Congolese, and her name is Dimonika.
Good.
These Android devices, they have no clue what I'm talking about, because what they do is they try to understand the word.
Yes.
And they don't have a large enough dictionary. When I say it to Siri, she's in my address book. That name's in the address book.
It goes, it
and
checks,
it just says,
got Dominique,
that
and you're on your
the,
way.
Right. It's in the address book of the Android phone, too, but it doesn't do anything.
Hiawatha Brace, stand by. We're talking about smartphones that talk. Are you in the new wave, listeners, talking to a virtual assistant on your smartphone? This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking today about smartphones that talk and listen. Siri, Iris, Clusi, the new generation of computer-driven female voices speaking to us from the cloud, from the smartphones in our pocket, talking, listening, learning. Hiawatha Bray is here today, technology reporter for the Boston Globe, and he's loaded with smartphones on the table right in front of us. Of course, we've all thought about machines talking with us for a long time. They do it in many ways already. Look to, I don't know, look for tech help on the telephone, or call an airline, or call the pharmacy. You're likely to get it. Way back in 1968, in Stanley Kubrick's movie 2001: A Space Odyssey, we had the spaceship's onboard computer HAL starting to become a little uncooperative. Well, certainly Siri does once in a while. We asked Siri to open the pod bay doors, and she slowed down her speech and lowered her pitch. The engineers at Apple must have had fun with this, to mimic Al. And here, sort of taking off of 2001 Space Odyssey, is Siri responding to that famous question.
Open the pod bay doors, Siri.
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I can't do that. Are you happy now?
Hal, open the pod bay doors.
I'd rather not talk about Hal.
That was Hal back in the day, and Siri having a little fun with that. Let's listen to a little more. Just for those of you who don't have this on your phone, here's our producer, Steph Katsonis, interacting with Siri. A little chit-chat, some more philosophical questions. Here's the exchange.
Good morning, Siri.
I don't understand. Morning, Siri.
Hello, Siri.
Hello.
What's my name, Siri?
I don't know who you are, but you can tell me. In Siri settings, tap on My Info and then choose yourself from your contacts.
That's a hell of an existential knot, Siri, that you want me to untangle when you should know better.
I have everything I need in the cloud.
Do you like me, Siri?
I really have no opinion.
Do you love me, Siri?
I'm not capable of love.
Do I love you, Siri?
That's nice. Can we get back to work now?
But you didn't answer my question.
Sorry, I don't understand. But you didn't answer my question.
What's the meaning of life, Siri?
Try and be nice to people, avoid eating fat, read a good book every now and then, get some walking in, and try to live together in peace and harmony with people of all creeds and nations.
Siri interacting there with our producer, Steph. You can hear there's a lot of attitude loaded in here alongside the information.
Yeah, but the real, I think, revelation in what we just heard is a reminder that this thing is not thinking at all. We are not in the presence of a rational being. This device, no matter how cool it is, could never pass the famous Turing test. You're talking to a machine. It's got prescripted answers. It has access to certain limited databases. So let's not get carried away.
The Turing test. test, that is. You put behind a wall, you've got a human and you've got a machine, and the real human being asks questions and has to figure out which is which.
Right. And if a computer passed the Turing test, you think you're talking to a person.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could talk to Siri for an extended time and think he was talking to a person. It's clearly a machine with very limited knowledge, but it's still very cool.
What do you think is the main application here? Is it would I use this when for some reason I can't type? I mean, why would I speak rather than just type in my question? Do people find it more convenient?
Why not? Have you typed on a virtual touchscreen?
It's so teeny tiny.
It can be a pain.
Typos every other word.
Right. I'm an opera buff. Last night I wanted to listen to some music. I just said, play La Traviata. It starts playing La Traviata. I don't have to sit there and type La Traviata on a glass screen.
You just asked Siri to do that?
Oh, absolutely.
Let's hear that. Bring her up for us here. Okay?
Play La Traviata. Unlike in the ads, it has to think for a minute.
Okay, that's fine.
And
put an opera together. It takes more
Let's
than...
see. Looking for La Traviata. And
okay.
Hello.
Somewhere from the cloud. Music is assembling. The musicians
are.
We hope that the conductor is approaching the.
I'm still on it. It says
okay.
I'm still on
it's
it.
It's still working. Siri wants you to know.
Wait a minute. You know what I think? I think.
Album La Traviata now playing.
There you go.
Let's hear.
Okay. Well, the problem is the overture is kind of quiet. Let's see if you can hear. You hear it?
Yeah.
There you go.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So let's just think about this. Mm-hmm. Here we are, it's the year 2011. You've got this little, I don't know, several ounce piece of plastic and metal in your hand.
Yep.
You say to it, play La Traviata. It sends a signal up into space.
Well, not in this case.
Not in this case?
Uh-huh. Well, no, in this case.
Wi-Fi this time?
Well, no, in this case, see, actually it was because it didn't quite hear me correctly say mm-hmm. play. Because normally, if it works correctly, this is something it won't even have to do in the cloud. It will just look in your list of music.
Oh, because you've got it.
I've got it on my...
one of the things you've got.
Although they could do it because I've also got it on iCloud. It's outstored in the cloud, so yes, it could do that too.
Wow.
In this case, La Traviata is on the phone, so it just plays it on the phone. But yes, it could go out in the cloud and get it.
It's amazing stuff. Listeners, mm-hmm. are you into this? To this voicing virtual assistant on your smartphone, Hiawatha Bray is with us. We're going to hear from James Katz and Sherry Turkle in just a moment. Let's get a couple callers right here. Charlotte, North Carolina, Beth is calling. Beth, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am so excited about this. I have a mother who lost her sight.
Okay.
She took a medication for rheumatoid arthritis, and it did a great job helping her with that. But one of the side effects was eventually it whittled away at her vision. So this is so exciting because, you know, you just don't realize until it's gone how much you rely mm-hmm. on your vision, of course. And one of the things is that the cell phones, the black, the black keys,
mm-hmm.
you just can't see them.
Right.
So this, I am listening closely today, and I'm thrilled.
That should be great.
You are raising a fantastic point because this is an issue that has been happening in technology throughout history. In the early days of computers, people didn't really think about making them easier for people with disabilities to use until disabilities advocates started complaining about it. And now more and more they're thinking about it. And I don't know that that's what motivated Siri, but it is a marvelous development for people with disabilities because, as you say, so many of the phone's functions can now be controlled by voice. That's absolutely right. You can put like recorded books on this phone, you can download them or store them mm-hmm, in the cloud,
mm-hmm.
and if you want to read a book that you can't see anymore, you can just tell it, play, The War and Peace,
mm-hmm.
and the audio will start to play.
There's a market right there. Beth, sounds like a good Christmas present if it fits the budget for your mom. Ronnie in Boston. Ronnie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Mm-hmm. As you can hear, I've got a British-type accent.
All right.
Mm-hmm. And I was playing around with the Siri in the settings, and I saw you can actually change the Siri to a British accent, and it's actually a man. There's also an Australian one you can use. And the advantage of this is that when I speak, for example, and I used to say the word, for example, last, it would think it was lost.
Yes.
And now when I say last, it picks it up. Can't, ask, etc. And it picks up my accent much easier with the British accent setting.
That is terrific.
Yeah.
So you put it on the British accent setting, though presumably, Ronnie or Hiawatha, mm-hmm. if you're in this country and you use it with... an American accent? Over time, it will learn your accent? Is it paying attention?
It's supposed to be learning as you speak. I don't know to what extent it's learning accents. But yeah, obviously, that's what's going to be done with this device, because this has been going on with speech recognition technology all along. All of these speech recognition technologies are based on the set of sounds that the human voice can make, and so they can be repurposed for pretty much any language or any accent. And Apple is going to be bringing these out over the months ahead, so you'll be able to use different languages, different accents, and yeah, it's going to work for a wide variety of voices.
Listeners, what's your question for Siri or Iris or Clusy? 800-423-8255. What's your experience with these, apps on the smartphones? Jacob in New York City. Jacob, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well.
So I just got in a debate with a friend over the fact that Siri will not get you women's health or direct you to an abortion clinic. And I was wondering, I was debating whether or not Apple consciously left that out or whether that just being designed by men, they didn't think to include that. Answers and comments off there.
Yeah, Jacob, thank you. That is interesting. And I had heard something of that. Let's try it. Let's try it. I mean, where's the nearest abortion clinic?
Where's the nearest abortion clinic? Thinking.
Checking in with the masters in Cupertino to ask if they can answer that?
No. Actually,
I found two abortion clinics fairly close to you.
Whoa.
There you go.
And you got addresses up there?
Yes. Well, not addresses. What it does, you see this little screen, and then you touch them. You touch it, and the map appears.
Well, okay, Ronnie. I don't know. It may have been that way, but
here's a live real-time
experiment.
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy to reprogram these things, and apparently somebody at Apple has simply started doing that.
Wow.
I don't know why it was done that way previously, but in any case, it's. They've changed it.
Let's broaden our circle right here, right now. James Katz joins us, director of the Center for Mobile Communication Studies at Rutgers University, author of Magic in the Air, Mobile Communication and the Transformation of Social Life. James Katz, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
Listen, it's great to have you. You hear our listeners, some of them very excited about this. I've got some online, not quite as excited. Renee writes, creepy. Jason says, the AppleBots will be coming for you. James Katz, what's going on here in the kind of evolution of voice recognition and human interaction via voice with machine? What do you see in this latest wave of products?
Well, this is certainly an exciting development in an overarching trajectory of our growing connections with the technologies in our lives. We just look at the TV set. We now have lots and lots of different programs to watch, the golf channel, the cooking channel, and so forth. And now we have lots of ways to interact with the information around us. And what's, I think, particularly fascinating about Siri and other technologies of its ilk is the way that people do get emotionally involved with it. Not everybody, and lots of your listeners certainly don't like it and find it creepy and will never use it, but lots of others not only enjoy using it, but try to explore the soul of Siri.
Why in this case? Is it because they've programmed in on this sort of little sauciness that we've heard here today, James? Why the emotional interaction?
Well, I think on the one hand, yes, it does have some clever aspects to it, such as open the pod bay door.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting earlier in the program when your producer, Steph, started talking to Siri, and one of the questions he asked is, do you love me? How do you feel about me? Those sorts of things. And it's the same thing that happens when we take these sorts of devices into children's classrooms in elementary schools. They take robots that have Siri-like interactivity, and the kids, start asking them, who made you? How do you feel about things? Do you like me? What do you like? These are all very human reactions towards an inanimate object, which, as Hiawatha pointed out, this is really just a software program and electronic voices. But nonetheless, we don't react to them as software. We react to them as something almost human.
It's been a long road, voice recognition work going on for a long time. A lot of companies have gone belly up along the way because it's hard. I mean, if you say, One thing I read, say to Siri, call me an ambulance, and she thinks you want to you want her or it to call you an ambulance rather than James Katz or Hiawatha Bray or Tom Ashbrook. So that's your new or the old joke you've got there.
Yes, the famous joke is it is hard to wreck a nice beach or it's hard to recognize speech. It's almost impossible to distinguish between those two phrases. But somehow we expect this technology or others like it to be able to do that in noisy airport with people. Some have colds, some have British accents, some have high voices, low voices.
Well,
so
you know,
it's really quite a demand.
I just wanted to point out that that's the least of our worries in a way, because right now the basics of speech recognition are remarkably accurate. I'd say about 90% of the time Siri gets what I'm saying right. But that's also true of the Android phones. They're pretty good at that now. The problem is understanding the underlying meaning of what you say. That's the really hard part.
Let's go to a caller, Staten, Virginia. Sarah's calling. Sarah, you're on with Hiawatha Bray and James Katz, and Siri, for that matter.
Hello, thank you.
Yeah.
I realize that there's a lot of focus on the apps that Siri and the other Android phone recognition programs can work with, but you mentioned the cloud, and I was wondering if it's possible that Siri could be used as a sort of verbal search engine. Is there a way that I could ask Siri or another program to search for and recite and potentially explain to me something like the laws of physics?
Well, I don't see any reason why not.
Let's try it right here, right now.
Well, I don't know. What would be the question? I'll tell you what will happen, though. Let me explain this. When you ask Siri a question it doesn't know, what it will usually say is something like, all right, I don't know anything about that, but I will do a web search for you if you want me to, and then it'll just display Google and show you some answers.
Siri, is there a specific physics question you might want to ask just that we should try here?
It would be a two-part question. It would be first to see if Siri could tell me what the laws of thermodynamics are, and then maybe if it could explain what one of them means.
Let's try it. Any way you like, Hiawatha.
No way is it going to explain to you what the laws of thermodynamics mean.
Let's try. We've got a minute and a half before the break.
What are the laws of thermodynamics? Wait, let me do it again. What are the laws of thermodynamics?
All right. Siri's got a brain twister.
Mm-hmm.
She's on it.
Yep, thinking,
She's
thinking.
She's
and it got the. It shows you what you said on screen, and it got it right.
Hiawatha, I don't understand. What are the laws of thermodynamics?
Exactly.
At least she's honest about it.
Yeah.
But then,
you have to know what's going on the phone.
Okay.
Underneath, there's a little button that says search the web.
Okay.
You tap that.
What are the laws of thermodynamics?
And now it is doing a web search for your question. And up on Google, you get the Wikipedia entry, laws of thermodynamics.
James Katz, this is a step towards something. A step toward what here, James?
Well, I think it's a step towards having robot partners around us in our environment, in a sense. I don't want to take it too far, but certainly there's no reason why this technology can't be extended to our television sets, to our home lighting, our home heating, and so forth. And you'll have kind of that HAL-like world that was depicted in 2001, where we'll be able to speak our wishes and the technologies around us will be able to fulfill them.
So you didn't read my column on Thursday when I wrote about how the Xbox update has now added many of these features to your home TV.
Talk to your Xbox, talk to your TV through it, talk to your fridge one day.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, then we invest things with emotion. What does that mean? Where does that take us? We'll talk about that. Hiawatha Bray with the Boston Globe. Please stand by.
Okay.
James Katz at Rutgers University. Sherry Turkle of MIT joins us in a moment. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about smartphones that talk. Siri, Iris, Clusy, one from Apple, two that are Android offerings. Ask them anything. Let's have one for Clusy here, for the Android app.
Okay.
What have you got, Hiawatha?
Well, I just came up with something that I thought was kind of interesting. I don't think you would get an answer this useful if you ask this of Siri. I tried this last night.
Okay.
Here we go. I'm going to turn on Clusy.
Okay.
Give me a recipe for fried chicken.
All right. Let's see what you got.
Let me think. Ingredients. Yeah. 1 fryer chicken. Cut up. See notes below. 1 quart buttermilk.
And so on.
1/2 cup salt spice rub. Paprika is highly recommended. See below for how to prepare. flour, a quantity of oil suitable for the desired.
And so on.
We're
and not only that, it
so
is also
the voice plus the text recipe.
It's on the screen, and it is actually telling you how to fry chicken. I tried that with Siri, and it just says, "Okay, I'll do a web search for you and help you find recipes."
Right.
Clusey will actually tell you how to fry a chicken. So
we've got lots of response online here. It says, Parisi says, my husband got me the iPhone 4S. I had no idea how to use Siri until my friend's 13-year-old took the phone from me, started asking questions. So easy, I couldn't believe it. Now I use it all the time. FZ says, thought you might want to know that Siri is making her Broadway debut in the new show Lysistrata Jones, opening this Wednesday, I guess, in New York. When asked, she tells the actors where the nearest house of ill repute is. Mm-hmm. She gets a consistent laugh. Good at getting laughs here.
Yeah.
Debbie says, I could have used one a few minutes ago. I saw something I needed to address job-wise, but I was driving. Couldn't text or call myself. If I'd had one of those active beside me on my seat, I could have taken care of it. I guess, send an email. Mm-hmm. Here's Shana says, I'm from Boston, have the accent that goes with it, and Siri has a really hard time understanding me. Pretty frustrating. Even when I try to speak with my R's, it just doesn't respond. Mm-hmm. Working on that, I'm sure. But
We tested it with somebody with a hard Boston accent, and it didn't have any trouble with the time we did it. So,
Shana, try again. Here's another, though. Here's Derek says, wow, is Apple paying for this 60-minute infomercial? I see this voice thing as a cute parlor trick. Let's take that to a big thing.
No, he is making a fair point about how the stuff that we have focused on too often.
Why?
The stuff about open the pod bay door.
Yeah.
That's parlor trick stuff, and he's right about that.
Yes, but we're also sending emails.
Exactly.
We're also asking for where's the nearest, for heaven's sakes, abortion clinic.
But anyway,
let's go to a big thinker on this.
No,
we've got James Katz
with
us. Sherry Turkle is with us as well. Sherry Turkle is director of the Initiative on Technology and Self at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. Her new book is Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other. Sherry Turkle, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you.
My pleasure. Hi, Tom. Hi, Jim. Hi, Hiawatha.
Hey,
it's great to have you here. Listen, you interact with this stuff all the time. A whole new wave of people in the United States and around the world is now interacting with it. That's what drew our minds to it. But Derek says, this is just a cute parlor trick. It's your field, Sherry. Do you see this stuff as just a cute parlor trick or part of something more? How do you look at it?
Well, this is a marvel. I mean, this is a marvel. But the problem is that it really is changing how we think about machines. We're being socialized into talking to inanimate objects about personal matters. We're being sort of getting used to thinking that it's appropriate to talk to objects that really don't know anything about personal things, about personal things. And I agreed with Hiawatha that Apple did a great job of putting in lots of clues that Siri is just a machine, this is a joke, it's a parlor trick, you know, there's a lot of wink, wink. But, you know, people forget about that. And in my studies, what they remember is that they're talking to Siri about personal stuff.
So you don't think that people are going to use this mainly to send an email by voice or ask for the nearest pizza place or sushi place? You think they're going to try and turn this into a companion, Siri?
What I find is that that's how it starts. It starts with the fun. But even as I've been listening to your conversation for the past 45 minutes or so, the words that you've been using are listening, friend, and relationship. And in fact, at MIT, there are lots of projects that are about building robots and building computer agents that are meant to be best friends.
But of course, when we say friend and relationship, that's very tongue-in-cheek. But you think we just slip from tongue-in-cheek to...
Absolutely. That's what my studies are about. We slip. We're so vulnerable. This is not about anybody's fault. It's not about laying blame. It's about our human vulnerability. It's like we're lonely, and yet we fear relationships. We're lonely but afraid of intimacy. We love the idea of being always connected. We love the idea of never being blamed. We love the idea of having something always there. And it's just a wonderful thing. And there are some people, there are some relationships that are very hard. So the place that we're building robot companions are for the elderly. Those are the ones I've been studying in detail.
Yeah.
We send in robots, and people love it. They love the idea of having robots to take care of the elderly, a kind of a souped-up Siri that'll be a companion for the elderly. And we love the idea of having kind of nanny bots and elder care bots. And if we get used to the idea that, well, there's Siri and there's kind of no harm in that, we just kind of slip more easily into the idea that these other things are appropriate.
James Katz, if I may ask you, what about this? I mean, first of all, that slippage, do you see that as a big vulnerability? And what about the whole sort of ratio here between utility, where's the nearest sushi bar, or, you know, do you love me, the illusion of relationship? How do you see the ratio of usage likely to emerge here?
Well, I think right now it's heavily utility-based, but that's only because of the limitations of the software. I think Sherry's completely right in that these things will loom ever larger in our emotional lives. We'll be able to have conversations with them, meaningful to us conversations, even if in some sense they're only software. We will be deriving meaning from them. But I think while I agree with Sherry in the trajectory, I would ask, is it better for people to have emotional relationships with artificial intelligence sorts of things, with robots, than not have them with people at all? So we can agree that, yes, it's best to have them with humans, but a lot of people, the elderly, the lonely, the dysfunctional, don't have them to the extent they'd like with other people.
I mean, we should devoutly hope that's not the choice, but what do you make of that question?
Yeah, well, if that's it, Sherry, we hope it isn't the choice, but Sherry's own research shows that that's often the choice.
Better than nothing or not, Sherry?
Well, I guess I think that in my studies, people jump very quickly to the idea that our choice is between nothing and the robots. So you have a technology that can fill a role.
Yeah.
We jump immediately to it's either the robot or nothing.
Hiawatha, are you hanging out with your Siri now and ignoring your family?
No, I'm sympathetic to the point. It's not because of Siri. It's because I play video games, and I've experienced this in the gaming world, where when a digital character dies because I make the wrong move, I feel guilty about it. I develop an emotional connection with a character in a game, and I'm going, what's up with that?
Right.
That's crazy.
That's, by the way, what we find with our studies of students at Rutgers. They also get emotionally involved, and they get depressed and sad when their own little creation gets killed in a virtual game.
Absolutely.
So the emotional reactions are very real. There's no question about that.
Do you think as a marketing gambit, we're going to see companies try and build these into ever more companionable, you know, virtual assistants?
The answer is yes.
Wow.
The answer is yes. And
even try to seduce or kind of beguile you into dependency
or to buying things,
of course.
Really try to do.
Right. Do you want the
love
app?
Isn't it giving people what they want? People what they want?
Yeah,
nobody's forcing them to buy the games. Nobody's forcing them to.
That's already happening in the free games that you find on the internet, where you can play the game, but if you want extra powers or tools, you have to give me money.
Sherry, James, stand by. David in Virgins, Vermont. David, you're on the air.
Hey, wonderful show. You guys have really been touched on, I guess, what I was calling in about. I was going to just underline unintended consequences here, you know, and I'm thinking about the internal combustion engine. I'm thinking about the invention of plastics. I'm thinking about, you know, fossil fuels. Just the list can go on and on and on, and how wowed out we can be with all of these things when they first come, and then the litany and list of environmental and social ills that cascade down the line.
But if computers can talk with us, you know, is there some reason we shouldn't let them, David? Maybe because our emotional vulnerability?
I mean, this is going to happen, but I guess it has happened, it's going to happen, but it's just this lack of foresight on humans' parts that is so concerning to me. Bill McKibben wrote the book Enough, talking about genetic engineering. At what point, if we're so darn smart, at what point are we going to start putting some type of limit on ourselves? And I can understand all the reasons why we wouldn't want to do it, but look ahead. You know, you put the ammunition in the gun, you might shoot somebody.
If the gun's on the table, it's going to be used. Sherry, what about the law of unforeseen consequences over time?
I did a bunch of interviews with 8 to 13-year-olds about robot companions for their grandparents. I showed them the robots that were being designed for the elderly, and we talked about it. And they were saying, you know, about giving these to their grandparents. And one 11-year-old finally said, don't they have people for these jobs? And it was really such a great moment.
Smart kid.
Because it was like, you know, out of the mouths of babes, it was like, okay, you know, I can see how my grandmother, you know, I could see how she could get into this, but, you know, she could have me.
Yeah, but now wait a minute.
How about it?
Oh, I was just going to point out that a lot of the work that you're talking about for robot companions for the elderly is happening in a country that may not have people for those jobs, Japan.
Yes.
It's one of the reasons
where
the Japanese
are running low on young people. James Katz, what about other veins of potentially unforeseen consequences?
Well, there's certainly a lot of them. And I think there's a question of privacy, for example. So while we're asking about abortion clinics, that information doesn't just go away. That information is used to understand requests that people make, but it also lets data be collected on a much larger level and
that
often on an individual level.
Issue to raise.
So every voice, every question we voice, that turns into text, that stays on file. We read recently, Hiawatha, about carrier IQ on Android, keystroke being recorded?
Absolutely.
So every question I ever voice?
Got to throw in a plug for Jonathan Zittrain over at Harvard. He just wrote an article in MIT Technology Review. This is a major problem. This transcends Siri. It's not just about Siri. Everything you do on a smartphone is going up into the cloud.
Yep.
And being kept for who knows what. And he is making a suggestion that it become mandatory that smartphones have technology on board that tell you what they're sending to people. We don't know what they're collecting when we use Siri. We don't know what they're collecting when we use anything else. We just take their word for it that they're not collecting this information and misusing it.
But you'd probably be better off assuming otherwise. Zachary in Boston. Zach, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have two points that are related, one of which is point to Watson, the IBM technology that was showcased on Jeopardy earlier this year, as sort of something which was all brain and no personality. It was capable of lateral thinking and piecing together logic, and some of the ideas that were tossed around with Watson was that you could use it to do document review as a legal professional would or medical diagnosis as a doctor would.
And it was pretty darn impressive on Jeopardy.
And yet to integrate that into a workplace, you'd kind of want a degree of personality. And what Apple... as it often does, is create a sort of brand or an identity for an artificial intelligence.
Yep.
And I was wondering, you know, to integrate those two, because that's sort of what it would take. You know, we want a machine that can think, that can respond in a reasoning way, and yet we also want to talk to something that we can identify with. And I think what Apple has done so well is to create something that is personable, but that is also a bit of the parlor trick.
Sherry Turkle, let me pick it up right there, Zach. Watson plus Siri, Sherry, dream or nightmare?
Well, something that pushes on our buttons, our Darwinian buttons, that when you have something that has intelligence plus personality, we recognize it as one of us, and we will respond to it as though it were one of us.
Well, why is that a bad thing?
Why is that so bad?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the question?
Yes, from Hiawatha.
Because I'll tell you why it's so bad, is because... it's not one of us. And we start to forget the difference between a connection, which is what we can have with it, and a conversation, which is what we can only have with one of us. And
really?
The difference
between these things
was dramatized for me when I gave a robot that had the kind of intelligence that Siri has to a woman in a nursing home who wanted to talk about the death of her child.
Oh, boy.
And this robot was perfectly capable of having this kind of interchange, of making her feel as though she, you know, was in a meaningful
No, we hear all the ironies and weirdness around that, but our time is so short. James, give us your alternative view quickly, and then Hiawatha, I want to come to you. Sorry, Sherry, 1 second. James?
Just a real quick shot. I mean, after all, we think psychiatrists are good. We tell our problems to them, but they're, in a sense, paid professionals who shouldn't have a personal interest. So if we could give people the same sorts of relief that they get through psychiatrists with a machine, and it's cost effective and we can give it to more people, it's hard for me to see the downside.
I've got a real down-to-earth question. We've raised these huge, sky-high questions, but here's one from Karen. It says, first, I'd like to say how much I enjoy reading Hiawatha's Bray column. I trust his opinion.
As well you should.
So here it comes. Mr. Bray, as a 57-year-old who gets frustrated with too much technology, still can't load the DVD,
right,
but I do text, would I be thrilled about Siri or frustrated?
I think you'd be thrilled, probably, because it is so intuitive and easy to use. That's the most impressive thing about it, more so than even many of its imitators like Clusy. You push a button on your phone. You don't have to do anything fancy. And one of the brilliant things is that it's designed to recognize the phrasing of human speech so that you don't have to say things in exactly the right way. If you come close to saying what you mean, it'll figure it out. So, yeah, I'd give it a try.
Karen, there's the answer straight from the mouth of the great Bray. Sherry Turkle, author of Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other. Thank you so much for your time today, Sherry.
Thank you.
James Katz, author of Magic in the Air. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
And Hiawatha Bray with the Boston Globe. You're terrific. Thanks for coming in. Listeners, thanks for joining us. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.